Good morning. May it please the court.
Wait a minute. Hold
on
up for a minute.
1 second.
I'm going to set the clock. Okay.
Yes. May it please the court. My name is Denise Chacoin for the Boston Redevelopment Authority. I will be splitting my time this morning with counsel for the Department of Environmental Protection. This case is about the vital role urban renewal serves in the public interest. This case is not about urban renewal redevelopment versus environmental protection. These are both important land use initiatives, but they are not in conflict. They are different objectives. Urban renewal is to eliminate blight through redevelopment of land. The constitutional amendment, known as Article 97, is to protect natural resources from development.
If the city, not Long Wharf with all its multiple uses, but just, I don't know how this happened, but let's just say you've got Christopher Columbus Park, and the city back in 1980 takes that under its urban renewal powers, under 121, and says, this is going to be used for a park. That's what we're taking it. It's urban blight, but we're going to use it only for a park, and it's a discrete parcel, no other use. And then 10 years later decides to sell it to somebody who's going to make a parking lot there because it needs the money. Would Article 97 come in? I guess what I'm trying to get at is there a difference in your mind between a parcel taken originally using the urban renewal powers of the city, but for a very precise purpose, only one purpose, which was to make parkland out of it as part of a plan. Is that different than Long Wharf, which has multiple uses? And this is one piece of a much larger parcel that has lots of different uses.
Yes. Well, the BRA often creates parkland as part of any urban renewal plan, and Christopher Columbus Park itself was that. It was taken under the BRA's urban renewal powers and then turned into a park, and because it was permanently to be used as a park, it was conveyed to the Parks and Recreation Department. So the BRA is not the keeper of parkland. It is when there is a further disposition that it becomes a park. And any land that is still held by the BRA under its urban renewal powers is subject to continuing modification to meet the city's changing needs, as with Long Wharf.
Okay, so it was that second step that distinguishes them in that case, in Christopher Columbus.
Yes, and that is true also of City Hall, which is cited in some of the amicus briefs. The distinction there is that it was urban renewal land that then was conveyed to the city of Boston with a deed restriction that it be used specifically for open space.
Now, the plan says that it may be modified, but if there is to be modification, the modification must be approved by the Boston City Council and the State Division of Urban and Industrial Renewal. Do you agree that you must get those approvals before you build?
Well, that was the language, I believe, in the 1964 Urban Renewal Plan itself. In 1996, there were new regulations that required only substantial plan changes to go through regulatory approval, and that was the case that this court decided, the Central Steel case, confirmed that. So for the change of a particular piece of an urban renewal plan, one parcel, that is not typically considered a substantial modification that requires other approvals. However, in this Long Wharf project, there was an array of agencies which did in fact weigh in, most notably the DEP by issuing the Chapter 91 license. There was also Coastal Zone Management, the Massachusetts Historic Commission, Boston Zoning was involved. So these things do not happen in a vacuum. The BRA determined that there was a need for redevelopment of one small piece of Long Wharf, which was a building that was created as a vent shaft and emergency access to the MBTA Blue Line. And the reason for the new development is to meet the changing needs of Long Wharf, which is, among other things, an exponential increase in the number of water transit users. Over 3 million people a year go off the end of Long Wharf for commuter ferries and to tour the harbor islands, and because it is also an active marina, the BRA determined that the open pavilion that is there would be better utilized by being winterized and becoming a place of public accommodation with public restrooms.
Right. So why is that not a substantial change, at least with respect to that rather important piece of land?
It is not a substantial change, Your Honor, because the vast majority of Long Wharf at the seaward end will remain open space. The pavilion area itself is an open structure that is about 2,900 square feet, and the proposed winterization and restaurant use will add only an additional 1,200 square feet, leaving over 29,000 square feet as open space. The Harbor Walk, which is a recognized park on Long Wharf, and the Compass Rose area, which is adjacent to this project site, both will be entirely unaffected by this proposed reuse. Therefore, within the BRA's discretion, that is determined not a substantial modification. The goals of the BRA are not in conflict with land conservation as outlined by Article 97 of the Mass Constitution. But just because an urban renewal plan states a proposed use to be open space or pedestrian walkway or a plaza does not then transform that land to being covered by Article 97. The initial taking is under the urban renewal statute, and the urban renewal statute defines the BRA's powers, and the power of eminent domain is predicated solely on the BRA's finding that land is blighted, substandard, or decadent.
Okay, but what I thought you had conceded in your answer to Justice Botsford, that if you take land for the purpose of redevelopment and then convey it to a conservation commission or parks and recreation, then that land becomes protected under Article 97. Do you agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor. Absolutely.
Okay, so if there were to be here, of course, there was a it's declared to be a park. You put a plaque on it. Should that be viewed as the equivalent of a conveyance in terms of the intention of the BRA to have that land be parkland?
It is not a conveyance, and it is, though, a park. So a portion of Long Wharf is protected by Article 97, and that is the Compass Rose area that is adjacent to this project site.
And it's protected because...
And the Compass Rose area is protected specifically in that scenario because of the acceptance of federal funds under the Land and Water Conservation Fund to create the Compass Rose. So that area is impressed with a special status, as is the Harbor Walk, and that is what the plaque, Long Wharf Park, refers to as.
Oh, so it's become, is it within Article 97, or simply that you risk federal funding if you were to depart from what was a commitment to the federal government?
Well, there has not previously been really any statement of when urban renewal land and what uses become subject to Article 97, but it is classified that way by the Parks and Recreation Commission of the City of Boston, that one protection, which does apply to one portion of Long Wharf, is Article 97.
Okay, so now BRA, so land conveyed for urban development can become Article 97 land if, one, it's conveyed to the Parks and Recreation, or second, if you accept federal funding with the commitment that it remain parkland. Is that sort of another addendum to when it can become Article 97 land?
I would say that it is, yes, a condition that would then alter its status as urban renewal land that can be modified.
Okay. Now, they will, I assume, come up and say there's a third addendum, which is when you put a plaque on it and say it is part of a park and you've declared it to be such. Why should there not be this third addendum?
Because the plaque does not define the boundaries of the area that is a park. And Long Wharf, you must recall, was built over 300 years ago and has been the site of an array of commercial uses. There were deteriorating warehouses and fish processing plants on Long Wharf until the BRA took stewardship of it. And it was through the BRA's vision that it became a gem of the Boston waterfront with pedestrian access and a bustling marina. And the ability to modify urban renewal land is what the BARA is charged with under the urban renewal statute to meet the city's evolving needs. And I would say, just in closing also, that the Superior Court erred in this circumstance by granting mandamus. Mandamus is a broad and dangerous precedent to use when it is not tied to any individual harm, which the Superior Court did here, and it would undermine the goals of urban renewal if this decision is allowed to stand.
Is there a, just as a procedural matter, is there a mandamus judgment? All I saw was a judgment affirming a motion for judgment on the pleadings, which I really took to be the 30A decision.
It is a bit confused how the Superior Court decision is written, but there was no other basis for standing, since Article 97 itself clearly does not grant an individual a right for standing, and the court acknowledged the Enos and Hertz cases, which confirmed Chase, that there's no right to standing. So she used the public duty doctrine, but even that must still have a showing of individualized harm, which the plaintiffs here, who live over a mile away and can neither see nor hear the project site, do not have. Therefore, the Superior Court judgment should be overturned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Annapurna Balakrishna for the Department of Environmental Protection. Regardless of whether Article 97 applies to the land at issue here, this court should reverse the portion of the trial court's decision to issue a writ of mandamus to invalidate a discretionary decision of the Department of Environmental Protection. Under the authorities that have interpreted Article 97, it is a transfer of legal or physical control that triggers the vote requirement in that constitutional provision. But the commissioner's decision here did not cede any or transfer any physical or legal control, nor does BRA's authority to lease this parcel derive from the Chapter 91 license. In concluding otherwise, the Superior Court mischaracterized the nature of a Chapter 91 license. It is a certification that legitimizes what would otherwise be an unlawful use under Chapter 91, but no other law. Upholding the decision to invalidate the Chapter 91 license for reasons that have absolutely nothing to do with Chapter 91 is going to have grave consequences for DEP permitting in general and administrative law. As for DEP, DEP will not know when it can act on a Chapter 91 license. Does it have to wait till all other approvals have been required? Can it manage its docket or schedule hearings? When can it do these things? Does it have to wait? Another consequence of upholding the trial court on the DEP's license invalidation would that be proceedings before DEP will be hijacked by issues that DEP has no power to, let alone a duty to decide.
I wasn't clear about this, but was the judge saying that before DEP could issue the Chapter 91 license, even though she agreed that the DEP didn't have power to really look at Article 97, but before it could issue that license, it had to go to the legislature? Is that?
It's not clear how she got to her decision. She said that DEP violated Article 97 by issuing its license, but she agreed that DEP couldn't decide the issue of whether Article 97 applied. So it's not clear how she got there, but one of the consequences of this decision is that the DEP license could be invalidated for a reason that it had no power to decide. So it's not clear whether they would have to wait for Article 97 to...
I read it as saying that you would have to, before you could issue the license, you would have to go to the legislature yourself.
That's DEP one reading of what is in the trial court's decision, that DEP would have to go to... the legislature under Article 97 because of the fact that the lands happens to be tidelands. But DEP, and that is why we argued that DEP doesn't cede any legal or physical control, and therefore the vote requirement for its action would not be triggered.
So let's take land which the BRA concedes Article 97 land. So we'll use Christopher Columbus Park.
Okay.
And if there were to be a proposal to change that park into a parking lot, take paradise, make it a parking lot, then you would say the DEP would have the ability to determine whether or not the public benefits would exceed the public detriment, and if it were approved, nothing could happen until then. You'd go to the legislature and get Article 97 approval.
Assuming, yes, Christopher Columbus Park was Tidelands, and DEP has a, which I believe it is probably, the Christopher Columbus Park was Tidelands, DEP could determine whether or not, for purposes of Chapter 1, that particular use had greater public benefit than detriment, but the license could not be used until all other approvals had been acquired. And if the entity who has the license, the licensee, decided to go forward with its project, despite not even violating another law, not getting the approvals it needed, an enforcement action, someone with standing could go to DEP and ask DEP to enforce its license with a court order or some other indication that an entity with the authority to decide that question had decided it.
So you could, wait a second. So you could stop the project because it would be a violation of the Chapter 91 license that they hadn't received the other approvals that they needed?
Well, General Condition Number 2 of the license says that you cannot use this license unless you have all of
the answer
your other
is yes. DEP yes, could use its enforcement powers to stop the hypothetical project.
The answer
because
is yes.
The city or the BRA had not gotten Article 97 approval.
Yes. Your answer is yes on that question.
Okay. And that's not what the judge did here?
No. The judge invalidated the DEP license using a writ of mandamus and citing Robbins, which also had to do with it.
She didn't order you to stop the project, in other words.
She invalidated our license. And for this, that upholding that decision may not have much effect here, depending on whether or not the BRA needs to go to the legislature for its project, but it will have unintended effects on permitting and administrative law in general, because
you can stop the project
mm-hmm.
because the land is Article 97 and there hasn't been approval, then to a certain extent you have the power to determine whether Article 97 applies.
Well, in that situation, Your Honor, DEP cannot decide whether Article 97 applies. Someone would have to get a court order or somebody with or maybe an opinion of the Attorney General, somebody with some enforcement authority has decided that Article 97 applies. DEP cannot decide whether Article 97 applies to a land. They don't have the power to do that.
But in the hypothetical with the Christopher Columbus Park, I think the city concedes that Article 97 applies. So you're starting from that proposition.
Well, if you start from that proposition, then DEP would say you haven't DEP has discretion to enforce its license and say you haven't complied with condition number 2, which requires all of your approvals to have been in order. We can revoke your license, or please comply in order to use your license.
Thank you,
Your Honors.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Gregor McGregor for the plaintiffs who are the appellees. This record is not only long, it's complete by having an entire administrative record of a 3-day hearing before DEP, and then supplemental materials offered by both parties, accepted by the Superior Court, and in it we find the documents that Your Honors have asked about. So that Judge Fahey had before her the actual taking documents, Justice Gantz, that you are well aware of, going back to 1964 with the Urban Renewal Plan, including Long Wharf, and the Urban Renewal Taking in 65, including Long Wharf, and the 1970 taking, adopting the plans for the earlier takings, all of which do take the end of Long Wharf for public open space.
Right, but what do you say about the fact that the plan also provides for the possibility of modification of the plan?
Yes, there are procedures for modification, and you identified through questioning both the old procedures and the relatively relaxed new procedures, but this case is about whether there's such a change of use or disposition or both by virtue of the Chapter 91 license or the lease to a restaurateur or both
well, we
to need the ultimate okay of the legislature approval.
The lease, the lease is not before us.
That's
what's
right.
Before us is a vacating of the Chapter 91 license. So we're not dealing with the restaurant, right?
I see this as a 30A14 review on the 8 grounds, which can include
the only thing that was before the judge, it came up in the process through the administrative process of the Chapter 91 license. That's it.
Yes,
right?
But there are three bases for jurisdiction of the Superior Court. The suit is not only 3814, it's also under the mandamus statute and declaratory judgment for declarations about the lease and the license and mandamus type relief against the agencies, most notably the BRA, and we've been focusing mostly in the questioning on whether that relief is also to be available against DEP. So that we know that the taking statute empowers the agency to take land for park and open space and recreation, as well as historic purposes, but we have the agency saying those are merely incidental. We have a lease which is approved by the DEP license, which also approves a change of use of part of the end of Long Wharf into a commercial establishment. And that lease is to the same restaurateur for the entire end of Long Wharf for 30 years, which is one-third the whole history of Long Wharf. And it's extendable for another 30 years to a total of 60, which is 20% of the entire history of Long Wharf. So in effect, DEP has delegated to BRA the legal control over the end of Long Wharf and approved the agency to in turn delegate the legal control for 30 or 60 years to a private commercial restaurateur. And through moving some lines with 14 variances and relaxations of city and state rules, as long as the seats and the chain segregating the seats is a little off the compass rose, it's willing to say not only that it will change the Chapter 91 license for these historic filled tidelands, it will approve a lease for someone else other than the Commonwealth, indeed other than the city, to be in charge day to day, week to week, year to year, of the end of Long Wharf, 3/4 of an acre of the filled tidelands that stick the farthest out into Boston Harbor. And my last thought on that, and of course contradicting the purpose for which this was taken. Now, all that's in dispute, however, is whether they need a vote of the legislature. When the Committee on Local Affairs, in a document cited in our brief, studied the passage of Article 97 legislation in the House and Senate and signed by the governor for over a period of 5 years, those bills were about 20 a year. And when a follow-up study looked at 5 years of such bills, the rate had increased because more agencies of the state and more cities and towns and regional bodies were aware of Article 97, and it was being enforced more rigorously by the Secretary of Environmental Affairs. So that roughly 75 a year can be put before the legislature and most pass. That's all we're talking about, not a prohibition, because when the Legislative Research Council was asked by the House way back before 1970 to fashion a bill to put before the voters as a change of the Constitution, they looked at the various models for protecting public open space along the shore and other places around the nation and selected the supermajority vote model. That's all that's triggered. Had this been done in this case, that is, had the city, like it does all the time, put a bill to the legislature about a page and a half long, which it does all the time, to change a park to a commercial restaurant or a facility in a park to a commercial restaurant, that would have passed in about 6 months. And the lease would have been signed, sealed, delivered, and the sandwiches would be for sale within 6 months. That's what happened to the Pink Palace on Boston Common. a simple bill authorized by the City Council that in its minutes acknowledges two-thirds vote is necessary. It's put before local affairs. It passes on two-thirds. The governor signs it, all with great fanfare about rehabilitating an old dilapidated structure.
But help me, and lo and behold,
we wouldn't have this legislation.
Let's go back. I know that one can go to the legislature and that they do with regard to land that is Article 97 land. The issue here is when does land become Article 97 land? And is it your – what is the trigger? I mean it's your sister says conveyance to a conservation or parks and recreation, a limitation on its use that's recorded, even a commitment to the federal government. Those make it land that's Article 97 land. We don't have any of those here, so what here makes this Article 97 land?
We know from the earlier cases before Article 97 was ever adopted by the voters in 1972 that dedication can make it necessary to get a vote of the legislature later.
Now, when you say dedication, the cases that I've looked at involved transfer or conveyance to conservation or some recorded limitation on use.
Those are either the cases involving the deed in trust or the restrictive covenant that the government accepts upon gift or puts on afterwards.
Which cases have dedication without any of those?
Oh, like the Boston Common cases.
Well.
But the Boston Common, I think, would be.
Unique.
Well, I mean. Nonetheless, there's a whole line of cases under the public trust doctrine that dedication or the doctrine of prior public use, and restrictions that are recorded or otherwise accepted can trigger votes of the legislature.
But one problem you have is that the Boston Common historically has been used as a public common, thus its name, and the Long Wharf has historically been used as a wharf, thus its name. So you don't have the same history here.
The key here is, did the justice of the Superior Court have before her the record back to 1964, which she did, indicating that notwithstanding that history, it was taken for a park.
But it was taken as part
space.
Of a, as a, it's taken maybe for a park and open space, but it is part of a larger urban renewal plan. It wasn't taken, right?
Well, by yes, Justice Spotts.
Aren't we back to the question about whether there can, whether part of the urban renewal powers that the BRA has is to make changes? And if so, where do you draw the line between what the BRA can do with respect to making changes to an urban renewal use of urban renewal land and where it can't?
Justice Botsford, we definitely do not draw the line at the word blight. Just because the original taking was for the underlying fundamental urban renewal purpose of alleviating blight does not mean that all parks that are taken as parks by virtue of urban renewal will never have Article 97 protection for 50 or 100 or 1,000 years. It is the look at the plan and at the taking documents of the agency, identifying the, as it being created as a park, that then triggers Article 97. And hence, the record here in front of Judge Fahey, laying that out from 1964 through all the documents I just mentioned, nails it that this is the Long Wharf Park. That's what it was going to be called. That was the purpose of it being taken, the end of it. That is the part beyond the Customs House building, which is the land in dispute here, just as you walk past the Customs House building. And so that is dispositive. We didn't need to rely on dedication, though we also have dedication here by virtue of the City of Boston declaring it protected by Article 97 in all of its documents, and the BRA acknowledging in all of its documents, including the RFP to developers for this, that it's protected open
this
space.
This particular piece of land, the BRA has acknowledged, is covered by Article 97?
The city has listed it as protected by Article 97 in the documents in the record. The BRA has acknowledged that when it went for its request for proposals and in its developer kit, described in detail in the Conservation Law Foundation brief before you as an amicus, that this was protected open space. What they're saying today is that, well, there's enough left that we didn't need to go to the legislature. The pavilion is going to be a year-round restaurant glassed in and privatized. The bathrooms will be available to the public when the restaurant is open. The trash cans will be picked up by the restaurateur. He'll maintain the binoculars on the public space. And we've just moved the seats of the outdoor seating far enough away off the compass rows, the actual installed rows in the pavement, that we don't need an Article 97 bill in the legislature. So yes, Justice Botsford, they did.
So your position, I missed this obviously, is that they have just totally gone 180 degrees, changed their mind, changed their position.
Yes, that's right. And in their brief, when they use the word flexibility, that's the flexibility they want. When they say in their brief, the BRA, that they want flexibility to deal with changed circumstances, that's exactly what they say. They would like to be able to move things around on urban renewal properties of all kinds, like a chessboard. Here, the purpose of this lease...
No, I'm just talking about the Article 97 designation. What I thought I heard you just say is the city has treated this explicitly as Article 97 designated land.
Yes, Park and Recreation, in its database listing of the chart in the record, lists this as protected by Art 97, along with the Wetlands Protection Act and other laws, namely the federal law of the Land and Water Conservation Fund. This waterfront park called Long Wharf Park
is listed saying that Long Wharf Park doesn't include this land. At least that's what I thought she said, is that Long Wharf Park is designating the Harbor Walk and Compass Rows.
That's not supported by the record, nor is it supported by the oral statements made about the use of the Federal Land and Water Conservation Fund was just the Compass Rose area. You will find in the record that the Land and Water Conservation Fund was used for the planning of this entire three-quarter acre. Not just installing some architect or artist concept of a Compass Rose and binoculars and some benches. That's why it was so serious when the state spoke up and said, you've got commercial use on land and water conservation land. You'll see in the record a plan where that line runs right across the wharf. And they had to change the license in order to stay out of that federal land for the consequences you've already discussed in questioning. Your Honor, did you have a question?
Muir versus City of Leominster. City establishes a playground. Turns out it's not working out. Playground is becoming littered with glass. They decide it's no longer being effective as use as a playground. It's city-owned land, and they agree to have it be transferred for some other purpose. Challenged, but court says no, the town owned it. It was used as a playground. It was used essentially as a park, but the town had not conveyed it to the Conservation Commission. The town could do with it what it will. Is that case wrongly decided, or is there a way to distinguish it from the case here?
There's a way to understand it, sir. First of all, playgrounds under the laws of Massachusetts are not protected nearly as much as parks and open space and historic sites and forests and the like. That's a reality of statutory law. Towns and cities and other agencies are free to get rid of playgrounds if they are underutilized. The City Council and Town Council Association addresses that all the time in its frequently asked questions. The answer to that particular case or a similar case would be, is there a deed in trust? That is a permanent restriction the municipality agreed to that was the single use. If not, is that a prior public use that cannot be changed without a vote of the legislature? And I've told you under the statutory laws codifying the doctrine, the answer is no, they're free to move playgrounds around. Is it part of a larger park? That is it a centerpiece of a park? And the answer in the cases I've come up against is usually not. So I think a playground is very much distinguishable, and I think you'd agree with me in looking at the many cases where playgrounds have been changed into even parking lots. Indeed, parking for the larger park.
Thank you.
And thank you for your consideration.